Welcome to From the Ground Up with Mark Weller. I'm Matt Rienzo here with Mark Weller. How are we doing, Mark?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. I'm excited about our conversation today with Craig Kogut. A career of promises made and promises kept, almost 30 years sort of. And I don't want to embarrass him, but I would call him one of the godfathers of ESG investing. So we're really
without a doubt. Yeah, it's going to be a great conversation. So let's get going. We have a really interesting show, as you just teased, and what I think will be super informative for our listeners. We'll be joined by Craig Kogut, founder of Pegasus Capital Advisors. From their website, Pegasus is a leading global private markets impact investment manager. As the first U.S. private equity fund manager accredited by the Green Climate Fund, Pegasus is dedicated to fostering sustainable growth while providing attractive returns for investors. So Craig founded Pegasus in 1996 with the vision to change private equity investing by integrating social and environmental factors into the investment process, something that is, in my opinion, Mark, been somewhat whitewashed or greenwashed in this case by many companies at this point. But Pegasus really and truly lives that. For, you know, almost 30 years, sustainability and health have been at the heart of what they do. So Mark, we're partnered with Pegasus in Grand Bahama and in Napa. You've known Craig for several years at this point. Excited to have him on the show today.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think for me, one of the things was, you know, there's moments in your career where you feel like maybe you've started to move yourself up and forward, your business up and forward. And I think partnering with Pegasus was one of those moments for me. So many years ago, 4 years ago now. So it's been really exciting.
Absolutely. That's great. So let's invite Craig on.
Craig, how are you today?
I am terrific.
That's great.
Great to be here.
Yes. And it's great to have you. So want to talk, you know, a little bit, get right into it. I want to talk a little bit about Pegasus for a second. The ethos of Pegasus, as Matt described in the beginning, was kind of ahead of its time in 1996. How did Pegasus come about and how did you identify the social and environmental aspect of being that important, so important at that time?
So I was lucky enough to be one of the founders at Apollo and starting a career as a lawyer, but, you know, really helping build an organization, which has obviously continued to grow. But when I left Apollo to build my own firm, I had a vision of building and creating fundamental value. And that translated pretty soon into focusing on things like environmental, like health, like impact with what we were doing, obviously making money for our investors. But, and we've learned a lot. We were very early. We were definitely pioneers and we've evolved. Things I worry about now, I didn't worry about back in 1996, 98. Mm-hmm. But the focus was to look back and say, we were proud about what we invested in, what we built, and leaving a legacy with companies that would have value, but value in multiple ways.
Yeah, that's great. And that's an incredible answer, especially for 1996, when you're thinking about things. It was a very different time, you know, and nowhere in the social and environmental aspect, it's more important than in Grand Bahama. They're literally on the front lines of global warming. There's any number of environmental resiliency and sustainability issues. You know, so I want to talk a little bit about Six Senses Grand Bahama, the work we're doing there. You know, we just started site work, you know, which is very exciting to get ready for sales and vertical construction in the coming months. You know, I want to talk a little bit about your level of excitement and your reason for investment in a project like that.
So to me, what we are doing with you, and we're so excited to be partnering with your firm, Mark, is we are helping revitalize an island that has been devastated by climate impact. And we are going to preserve coral. We're going to provide jobs. We're going to do development that is modeled from a sustainability standpoint, which will lead to improvements in healthcare as well, with medical centers coming. I mean, the magnifier effect of what we are doing is, to me, what an investment can do. So yeah. I'm incredibly excited. We're going to be using model building materials. Obviously, we're going to be using all best environmental practices, and we're going to be protecting coral reefs, which is one of the exciting things as well. So to me, the impact on the country, the island, all starts with this project. That it's going to magnify and revitalize an island that is how many miles away from Florida, the coast?
Under 60 miles.
Under 60 miles
from Florida. You know, And it's crazy. This is going to be a huge economic. The way we look at climate investing in Pegasus, it's got to be about economics. So you got to do the right thing, but it's economic development. And this is a crucial economic development and livelihood project.
Yeah, I would agree. And I feel the same way when I look at it. It's very exciting. You know, the other day when we did a large presentation to over 130 or 140 people in Grand Bahama, there was a slide that went up after the introduction of Weller and the introduction of Pegasus. There was a slide that went up and it showed the different publications that we had been featured in for this project. And nowhere had this been done for Grand Bahama anywhere by anybody. And just that alone on the front end of the project, starting to publicize them in some of the publications like Travel and Leisure and several
Rob other. Report, Real Deal, architectural design, all these publications that Grand Bahama is now getting on the map.
That's right. And I give Pegasus and the team at Weller a lot of credit for that, just because those optics alone are a good start. And I can't wait to turn all the optics and all the conversation into reality. So, you know, of course, I like to talk about the six senses, just changing gears for just one second. The sixth sense is Napa, just for a second. We're doing a project in Napa together. Although it's different than Grand Bahama, it still has similar attributes, environmental, sustainability, and resilience. You know, Napa has an amazing cross-section of wine, food, elevated experiences. It's mixed in a really beautiful natural landscape. It's one of the most special places in the world, in my opinion, certainly in the United States. Just a little conversation. Want to know a little bit about Napa and your thoughts on this incredible development in the region.
So, as you know, we used to own Six Senses, Pegasus did, as a firm, which we sold to IHG. And I first saw this. I've traveled to Napa a lot. I've lived in Los Angeles for many years and used to go up. So I've seen Napa mature, become a leading wine production area, but also a leading sightseeing area, a huge tourist destination. So I was shown this site when we owned Six Senses. And I got excited about it because of the beauty of this site, which is amazing, amazingly beautiful area to walk on. The history, this property has a really unique history in terms of involving former President Reagan and others as a resort.
For those at home, it's formerly the Etna Springs property, which does, you know, since the early 1900s has a ton of history. So,
yeah, I mean, this was a signature resort before people talked about Napa and wine. You have your own ecosystem here in Poke Valley, which is spectacular. And yet you're 20 minutes away from 15 minutes away from the best wineries in Napa. So the site, the beauty of the site, the serenity of the site, the trees. When I walked this property and drove around again, Mark, must have been 10 years ago. I said, we need to do something. Now that deal didn't come together when we owned Six Senses, but when it came back, and we could partner, I think this will not only be the premier resort in Napa, I think it will be one of the two or three premier resorts in the United States.
Yes, and I agree with that. And that's exciting. And we feel the same way, you know, and we're out there right now finalizing a lot of things on that project, and we couldn't be more excited. So that's a great synopsis, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I want to go back to something Mark was talking about a second ago. You know, Mark mentioned some of the branding and the attention that we've gotten in Grand Bahama. There was a great piece, as Mark teased in Travel and Leisure, about Six Senses Grand Bahama, showcasing the new resort renderings and giving a little update on the project. We think Grand Bahama is going to be the next great tourism destination, you know, frankly, in the Caribbean, but possibly even in the world. And our project will certainly be a catalyst, as you mentioned, for growing, you know, the economy in Grand Bahama, but also ecotourism specifically in Grand Bahama and in the Bahamas in general. You know, ecotourism is a buzzword these days. So having said all that, what is the future of tourism and ecotourism, and how do we define it in today's context?
Matt, I think it's a great question. And ecotourism could be controversial because some people say ecotourism just means you're on a pretty beach, or ecotourism means, oh, I'm going to see some animals. And there have been a lot of developments that have been done badly. On the other hand, when it's right, when you involve the community, when you build right, you build for resilience, and you use it as an education tool and you preserve nature, I think it's absolutely crucial to preserving our natural environment. So, and we work closely at Pegasus. with the UN World Terrorism Organization, and I know they're excited about this project. We work closely with UNDP on the importance of tourism. Without ecotourism done right, crucial areas of nature, whether it's coral reefs, whether it's mangroves, whether it's key marine species, parts of Africa with great wildlife, they're not going to survive. So ecotourism is absolutely, and maybe there should be a better word. I mean, we could say sustainable tourism, but sure. If it's done right with low impact, it's absolutely crucial to support communities, because communities without economic support, without livelihoods derived, nature is not going to be preserved. So, right. And we've seen a tremendous increase post-COVID in travel, obviously, and particularly luxury travel. So I think there's a huge opportunity to use Grand Bahama. And I agree, it is going to be a great destination. And what we're doing is the anchor of that.
That's right. No, that's really exciting. You know, I had the experience of listening to David, your partner and your son, speak about this. And it's very similar question was asked. He kind of asked himself that so he could respond. And I was really motivated and moved by the thoughtful response, because I don't think everybody understands the levels of assistance it has in both ecological sustainability combined with the local economy, combined with, you know, truly preserving what's there and keeping it in the same form or improving it. So that is a great response. And I appreciate that, you know, and on that line, I mean, what are the most sort of successful examples, in your opinion? Again, this is just an opinion and maybe a tough question, of ecotourism contributing to conservation efforts and community benefits, and what lessons can be learned from them?
Well, one example David and I both love to cite is what's happened in Rwanda around gorillas. And gorillas, these are mountain gorillas, had been poached. And the numbers have declined dramatically, but particularly in Rwanda, Uganda as well, but Rwanda has been the lead by building up a tourism business, limiting the number of tourists as well, mm-hmm. in terms of who can go, so you don't have environmental destruction, but doing high-end tourism, poachers have been turned into porters. The populations have stabilized and, in fact, soared, because the local community, which had to kill to survive, now needs to protect and preserve. And yes. It's an amazing story, what's gone on. And there's some great companies there. There are examples actually throughout Africa. I mean, Singida was one company I'd mentioned who does amazing work, who we know well, around ecotourism, where they give back to the community, and they will do better actually than national parks often in protecting animals, because Absolutely. The local population is embedded and has a stake in protecting. So I'd say the best examples are actually in parts of Africa, but mm-hmm. I think we need to, and it can be extended. You know, we're working on separately on a hotel in Galapagos with Six Senses, which I think will have similar aspects, and what we're doing in Bahamas, I think, will be a model for ocean, coral reef conservation protection in the context of really a sizable island. Yes, and I'm incredibly excited about that, because this will be a model copying what's been done in Africa.
Yes, that's actually incredible. There's an area that my son and I went over to Grand Bahama this summer. I had meetings over there, and he came with me, and we went snorkeling up in the northern part of the island.
Rift Harbor in the Sweetings Key area.
I mean, literally, it should be a national park. It's so beautiful. But literally, it is protected by the locals. There is so much, I would call it ecotourism, going on with this float that you do, depending on which way the tide is going, this snorkel float, that they protect and guide this to keep it incredible and keep it in the condition it's in, with giant pieces of coral and sea cucumbers everywhere and big blue holes with big, huge fish poking their heads out and going back in when you go over it. But I was amazed at how protective the locals who serviced this with their small boats and who brought all the tourists up there, which wasn't a lot of tourists, it's rather limited, but how protective they were of it. And it's a very similar concept. It's not the kill concept, but instead the preserve concept, because
it's preserving. And I think also, if you do things right, you're also teaching people who come about the importance of nature, which is a big part of what we will do with Six Senses here. Educate kids, educate the parents, so they have a stake, and they get changed. What I've seen with some of the Sixth Senses we've done is people who learn about nature, they don't forget.
That's right.
They want to come back and see it again, watch how it's been preserved. So I think we will change lives, and also we will be working with locals who, like the ones you mentioned, will even get more excited about preserving their treasure.
No doubt. I love that. And a group like Sixth Senses too is unique with the give back percentage of proceeds of the hotel go back into the community, directly into things that affect the local community. And I think that's a unique piece of what Sixth Senses does. So we're really excited to be involved with that part. And we think it's going to play a huge component in the preservation of the conditions and the improvement of the conditions in Grand Bahama.
Yeah, I think.
Well, Mark, let me give you a call out though. Weller Development, that's who you are though. One reason we were so excited to partner with you is that philosophy, Sixth Senses, is your philosophy.
Yes, I mean,
you've been
right.
With what you've done before, giving back to the community is a crucial part of what your company's about.
I appreciate that. That's
absolutely was a huge factor in why we were excited and continue to be so excited to partner with you.
I appreciate that, Craig. And I will tell you this, the older I get, the more I feel strongly about what we're doing with conviction. So every year that goes by, as I get older, I really feel stronger and stronger that our triple bottom line approach it matches up with Sixth Senses. It matches up with Pegasus, but it matters and it's meaningful. And if more people had the same approach, the world would be a better place. Quite frankly, it's not all about the dollars. It's all about everything. It's all about the environment. It's all about the community. Yeah, we have to get a return. Of course we do, to make these projects go, but it's all about a lot of things. So I appreciate you mentioning that.
Yeah, and I want to call out a couple things, Craig, that you just said. One being limiting the number of tourists. I think that's going to be critical in Grand Bahama, for us to preserve, as we were saying, preserve some of those incredible natural resources. I also love the phrase poachers becoming porters. I think that's really cool and a good little slogan that we could hang on to. So along those lines, I wanted to ask a question. You know, we talked about some of the positives that come from ecotourism and what makes it up, but what are some of the biggest challenges? You know, obviously we talked about a couple things, restricting numbers and, preserving the area, making sure that the beautiful things you're trying to protect don't get destroyed. You have fuel issues and some of the known concerns, whether it's funding, infrastructure, policy, perception. What's the path for, sustainable tourism from a cost perspective in your mind?
I think technology's helping us here on some of these things, where the costs of things like renewables and even things renewable offshore renewables, as an example, on the power side are coming down and are becoming economical. There have been great advances in building materials sustainability wise, which, the Weller team has been leading and sourcing. Depending on the environment, water is becoming an increasing issue with many destinations not actually having enough fresh water. Some of the things we're working on separately at Pegasus, which we're going to share with you, where we think we can add things economically. So I think it's another reason which pushes you towards a luxury, lower density, because some of these things still are, to do it right, it is more expensive. But I think, again, technology's worked in our favor there. I think and it will continue to do. I think one of the challenges you have, depending where you are, is what's the overall plan that you don't control? If you're on a small island, which we're not here, what is going to happen? What are your neighbors going to do? And there the key is to work with government and work with the community to try to have them do things that correspond to what you're doing to preserve and get them to believe, as I think, for example, Galapagos has done very well, that you need to preserve the entire ecosystem. So that can be a challenge. If you build a beautiful eco resort and next to you something you don't control. Now, this property is a pretty special one, and Weller has a significant control over a large swath. But that's a challenge in some locations.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, it actually brings to another question that I have. You know, when we've talked about this before, but I mean, how can the public and private sectors collaborate to create a more sustainable ecotourism? And the first thing I was going to say before you answer that is what I found and learned working with you is, and I found this over the years, but you find it's very important that you are rowing the same direction as your local or federal or whichever government. Yeah. And so assuming that you have that cooperation, which we have had, how do the public and private sectors collaborate?
Oh, I think, in terms of things like marketing the island or the destination is a key. What's the messaging? And the private sector has a part, the public sector has a part. Obviously, cooperation in terms of accelerating approvals and being willing to learn about new technologies by the government is important with things they may not have seen. Mm-hmm. Incentives can also be important depending on what you're doing, especially if you're piloting something. So in many jurisdictions we work in, the governments will give you incentives to actually bring a new technology or a new building technique to a destination. One of the issues for a place like Grand Bahama is what happens with cruise ships, when we've seen what's happened in Barcelona this summer and other places in Europe, and we talk about overcrowding, I think you have to be realistic and say it's important for the economy, but how you get the cruise ships to contribute, buying local, helping, which is one of the things I'm nuts about, is cruise ships should be buying everything they can from the local community.
I agree.
100%. And so fishing and the like, I mean, cruise ships shouldn't be coming to Grand Bahama and feeding salmon and not buying from locals and any agricultural things you can do. So I think that's an area where working with governments, we can actually together, private and public, can really cooperate to enhance this vision that I think we all have together with the government of what Grand Bahama can be.
No doubt. And that's actually a good point. You know, I've gotten to understand the Carnival, this Carnival project down the beach from us a ways, and I've gotten to know their philosophy and their strategy. And they have put a lot of emphasis on local vendors, yep, local food, everything they can. And I think things like that, if they follow through, which they appear to be doing, are really helpful for the overall community. When you have up to 20,000 visitors coming a day on 3 or 4 different boats, and you know how that could really contribute to the local jobs, the hiring local portion. So it's interesting, and it's interesting you brought that up. But I've been a believer in the positive of that, and so far what I've seen has been good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's up, and the government can help steer that, and if the private sector will work, I think it's really important.
That's
and
right.
So it and it, it's great that that's working, because that really is something which doesn't always happen.
Absolutely.
And so it where the local population feels they're not benefiting from it at all. So
that's right.
I think the ethos, you know, the government's building and we're a key part of it, around working together for the benefit of the island is really crucial.
No, that's great. And I think that's exactly the way I think of it as well.
No doubt. And I want to ask one more thing, Craig. You know, talk about Pegasus and the relationship with the Global Fund for Coral Reefs. You know, talk about how that came to be involved with Pegasus and how that investment came to bear in Six Senses Grand Bahama.
So the Global Fund for Coral Reefs was created by originally as a grant-making entity to help preserve coral reefs, which are obviously threatened by climate change. It was launched by the UN and 2 private donors. Since then, a number of principally countries and other private donors have contributed, and people can read about this, to the Global Fund for Coral Reefs. But there was never an investment component until we were asked by a group of folks who administered the Global Fund for Coral Reefs and its board, the UN. Mm-hmm. UNCDF now is leading the Global Fund for Coral Reefs on the grant side to form an investment arm. So we were honored to do that, excited about that. I am passionate about the oceans. I think the oceans hold the secrets to our future, our survival. And it's the least funded source of opportunity and challenge around climate change. I mean, dramatically underfunded, and you know, 50% or more of the world's population lives on coast. So this is obviously focused the Global Fund for Coral Reefs in areas where they're coral, so mainly in the global south. But I was incredibly excited when we were given that opportunity. And then we went to the Green Climate Fund and we launched a fund with them as the anchor, which can invest in opportunities that impact, which can be preserve, protect coral reefs. And as our discussion earlier about ecotourism, how critical it is to protect nature. To me, this was a dream project from the start, with the benefits to protecting coral, but also again, restoring, revitalizing a key island, which without this protection, people wouldn't be there, population wouldn't be healthy, and the coral would suffer. So
that's right.
This is one of our flagship investments, and I'm beyond excited about it.
That's great. You know, I want to dial out a little bit and look at, you know, we sit here, you know, you've been doing this for a while now. We're sitting here, it's almost 2025. You're almost 30 years into it just with Pegasus, which is essentially like your second act or whatever it is. I mean, this is your second career, you know, in real endeavor. What do you love about this work? You know, what gets you out of bed every day?
I love what I do because of its impact on people. I mean, impact on animals too. I love nature. That's what got me into being an environmentalist when I lived on the West Coast and I went to America's national parks, which are unbelievable, obviously. Yeah. But to me, what's exciting and what gets me going every day is how it gets back to your triple bottom line. We can make an impact and we have to make an impact. And seeing people's faces when they go snorkeling, as you described with your son, seeing someone in the Maldives who's never, I mean, a local who's never experienced the joy of actually seeing their own coral. Yeah. It's just an amazing thing. And changing people's lives. As I said, our guests will be changed by what happens. Yes. And that's what gets me going. It's about people and about animals I love, but foremost, it's about making people's lives better.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it fits so well into all the projects you're working on and the projects we're working on together. So that's incredible. And it's fun to hear that because I feel the same way. Because at the end of the day, when I showed up at that meeting the other day and talked about what your company and our company were doing together, and people being so excited about it and realizing that there was jobs coming, there was a chance for people to move back to Grand Bahama and take jobs. And then there was a chance for all kinds of career training opportunities and so on, seeing the joy on so many people's faces, the contracting opportunities. And then speaking so bluntly about the island and our belief in it and the beauty of not only the people, but also the environment. I realized quickly, like, we're impacting people. And that's important. And that's what gets me out of bed, quite frankly, because that's really at the end of the day, what it's all about.
No doubt. And, you know, one of the things to end on, Craig, you know, we sent you a video yesterday and some pictures from the Grand Bahama site of the site clearing. As Mark mentioned, this week, we actually started site clearing. We had our community meeting last week where we kind of
I want to add one point. The site clearing, which I think is really amazing, it's being cleared primarily of invasives. It's the casuarinas that have taken over entire islands, basically. They're not supposed to be there. They grow at a rapid rate. And removing them alone, the first move and investment that Weller and Pegasus have made as far as moving dirt is immediately affecting the environment.
And I don't think people understand that normally. You know, we're doing the same thing with Galapagos. The first we did is remove these invasive species, which were planted and which strangled the birds there. Here, you cannot restore biodiversity until you get rid of those invasives.
We've been very meticulous this week in removing the invasives and preserving the non-invasives. So, and we found 16 trees, seven of them were mahogany. We found 16 trees that we're going to save and donate to local organizations. And so, you know, we are clearing the site, prepping it for vertical construction and getting ready to launch this project in earnest. But we're also taking meticulous care as we do that. So,
but Matt, you know what's amazing about it? Like Craig said, though, that's a great example of nobody even notices. Nobody even knows. And like, I know because I've been out there for years and I understand the invasive issue. And here we are. And it's like, we haven't even started the project. We're just doing some basic site clearing and we're already making an impact that we believe is positive. And that has to really make you understand, if you can do it this early in the game, what happens when you actually build the entire hotel and start creating the jobs and everything that comes with it.
Can't wait. Well, I know we could talk for hours here, Craig. This has been fantastic. Really interesting conversation. You know, your experience. Thank you for sharing it with us. And we can't wait to keep working together for years to come.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on today, Craig. It's an honor to be in business with you. And it was a good conversation.
Well, it's been an honor for me to be your partner. And I look forward to coming back and we'll talk about other things, but where we are as this project keeps going in Napa, because really excited to watch the project and the videos you sent are unbelievable.
Yeah, so I think it goes back to what I said at the beginning. It's 30 years of a track record for you, promises made, promises kept, and it's exciting. It's exciting to do it.
No doubt. Well, Craig, thanks for joining us today. We had a great show today. Big thank you to Craig Kogut for being with us. As always, we love hearing from the audience, so hit us up on Instagram, on LinkedIn, at Weller Development, with questions, comments, or ideas for an upcoming show. Thanks for listening. I'm Matt Rienzo, and he's Mark Weller. Keep building, people.